comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's talk radio like nowhere else on the planet, that's a guarantee. And we're here because you have a right to know. It's our opinion that you matter. Tonight we're going to do Open Line Live, BYOT, that means bring your own topic. And that means we'll talk about whatever's on your mind within our genre, so get your fingers warmed up and ready to do the dialing. It's possible that, maybe you want to talk about Command Sergeant Major James Norton. And that amazing account he gave us of a battle between UFOs and the U.S. Army in 1977 at Fort Benning. Some people think, he's right on target. Other people think, they don't really buy the story. Well, that's the nature of things, and that's why we have Open Line Live, so we can discuss it, so we can talk about it. So you can express your views on the topics. Maybe you don't want to talk about that. Maybe you want to talk about the show that we did last night. And actually, last night was the third show in a series of shows that I've done talking about the Giza Plateau and its relationship to the constellation Cygnus as opposed to Orion. But last night, specifically, we looked at it to see, is there a connection between that information and the NASA Kepler mission? And maybe you want to talk about that. Maybe you think that was right on target, but maybe not. Maybe you think we were way around the corner on that one. But Open Line Live is where you get to say what you think about it all. Could be anything, whatever you wish to talk about. Maybe you want to talk about Bigfoot or maybe shadow people. I've been getting quite a bit of email lately about shadow people. So maybe you want to talk about shadow people or super soldiers. We've had some email recently about that. Whatever it is that you wish to talk about within the genre, it is BYOT, Bring Your Own Topic Night. And that means, of course, that it's kind of like being, it's kind of like you get to be the talk show host. You get to choose the topic that we're going to talk about. If you haven't yet subscribed to the K-Files, you want to be sure and do that. The K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. And when we say free, we really do mean free. Okay? So you just go over to my website and click where it says K-Files. You can't miss it. It's right in the middle of the screen. Just click where it says K-Files and subscribe. It'll only take a few seconds to do that. And you're going to get a confirmation email. It's got a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription. So get your subscription activated and we're good to go. And then you'll start getting our newsletter. We'll be back right after this.
Nonsense about UFOs and extraterrestrials who is about to run away in fear. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
right, welcome back. And as I said, this is BYOT night. This is Open Line Live, Bring Your Own Topic night. And we will, the phone lines are open. So if you've already got a topic you want to talk about, you can call us. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. First-time callers, the first-time caller line, 623-237-3814. If you're outside of the USA and Canada and you don't want to make that international long-distance call, although we would be delighted to speak with you on the phone, we have something called Flash Message set up for you. So if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you don't want to make the international phone call, you can go to my website, scroll down. You'll see the link right above the picture of tonight's show, and you can send me a flash message that way and participate that way in the show. I want to share an email with you that I got and make a couple of comments about it. Like I say, the phone lines are open, so if you want to call, you can. And but I'm going to read this email, because it points out something, a couple of things, that I think are pretty important. This is from Michael in Utah, and here's what Michael has to say. He says, Dear Mr. Smith, after watching a couple of your vids on YouTube, I decided to listen to your live show out of curiosity. Curiosity about just what kind of people would listen to this nonsense night after night. After listening to last night's show, I had to change my opinion, for it was not nonsense at all. Your information about Giza and the possible connection to the Kepler mission actually made a lot of sense. I'll be listening each night now. I guess the kind of people that listen to this show are pretty much like me. Michael from Utah, thank you. Let me show you what that points out. First of all, there are people who have these preconceived notions about the audience. And their preconceived notion is that the audience of this show or any other show is somehow kind of monolithic, and they don't think for themselves. And the talk show host tells them what to think. Now, the reason people get that in their heads is, first of all, and Michael, I'm not trying to upset you, but that's mushroom thinking, man. That's not doing any kind of reasonable critical thinking. No audience at any show is monolithic. Now, they do have things in common, things that they're interested in, and they have that in common with other people in the audience. But not everyone listens to this show for the same reasons. Some people listen to this show because they like to hear us talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials. But they don't care anything at all about when we're talking about ghosts or shadow people or other paranormal kinds of things. They just like UFOs. Then there are other people that listen to this show because they like ghosts and shadow people and other paranormal activity. They don't care anything about UFOs. But this show is all about the strange and unexplained, and you never know when you tune in just where it's going to go. And it's certainly not monolithic, and this could be said of every audience of every talk show. There are as many reasons why people listen as there are people listening. They're not monolithic. As an example, Michael, your reason for listening was because you were critical of the show before you had ever heard a live show. Your reason was because you had a superiority complex about the show. Again, don't get upset, because it appears you have repented of that sin and you realize that we are not monolithic. We are not a bunch of mindless zombies out here being programmed. And but that was your reason for listening. But this also points out something. I don't care what it is that motivates people to listen as long as they listen. It's okay with me if they tune in because they're spying on the show, or they tune in because they're, like Michael, kind of have a superiority complex about the show and just want to have that confirmed, you know. That's okay. Or if they tune in because they like UFOs, or they like ghosts, or they like orbs, or they like shadow people, or Bigfoot, or whatever it is we're talking about, whatever the reason is that motivates people to tune in and listen to the show, that's okay with me. I got no problem with the reasons. There is yet another thing, and that this email points out, and I think it's very important. His last statement is, I'll be listening each night now. I guess the kind of people that listen to your show are pretty much like me. Well, yes. And the fact is, we are all of us on this planet, pretty much alike. There are little variations, there are little differences here and there, but mostly, we're pretty much alike. And there's not any of us superior to the rest of us. You know, I have a little statement that I make here on the show. Those who have been listening for a long time have heard it, and it goes like this. Powerful people are only as powerful as the rest of us let them be. Powerful people are only as powerful as the rest of us let them be. So I don't recognize that there are people who are superior to me. But I also don't recognize there are people who are inferior to me. Truly. And I would say, Michael, that you would find a great many people in our audience that have that in common. Not everybody, but a great many people in our audience do have that in common, that being that we don't have a superiority complex, and we don't have an inferiority complex. We view each other as equals. Those who have listened to the show for a long time, you've heard me talk about it. You've heard me talk about that just because somebody's got a PhD doesn't mean that what they're saying is more true. With a PhD, say in astronomy, they may be able to give a more precise description of what's being observed out there than I would be able to give. However, whatever I describe, however I describe it, is just as true as what they describe. Because of their training, it may be a little bit more precise, and they may be able to add some details that I wouldn't have noticed, but their statement is not more true than my statement just because they have a PhD in astronomy. And this is true of you. This is true of all of us. And we've got to get over this credentialism. We really do. We got to get past that. I can appreciate credentials for what they are. I don't appreciate them for more than they are. And, we try here to make sure that we kind of get over credentialism and try to view each other as on equal ground. So welcome to the bunch. We're glad you're here, Michael, and I hope that you're listening tonight out in Utah, and I hope you give us a call because it is Open Line Live. Now, last night, I talked with you about the Giza Plateau. This is at least the third show that I've done recently dealing with the Giza Plateau. The first one had to do with the finding of the tomb of Osiris. And that's not mythological. It has been found. That's a fact. It has been found. It has been excavated. And I shared the information with you about that. I shared with you the photographs from inside the tomb. Those of you who are watching our TV channel. The second show was where we went back to Giza. And, well, in that very first show is where we learned about the work of Colin Andrews and his discovery that, in fact, the Giza Plateau is not laid out to match the belt of the constellation Orion. That is what is commonly taught. That's what's commonly said and commonly believed. But he shows why that's not true. Because when you lay the star map on top of Giza, it doesn't fit. It's close, but no cigar. But he did find that the constellation Cygnus fits. And constellation Cygnus fits exactly. And one of the stars in Cygnus marked a spot where there didn't seem to be anything, and he said there's got to be something there. Well, what's there directly under that star is the tomb of Osiris. In the second show, we talked about the possibility that in their excavations of the Giza Plateau, they have discovered possibly this hall of records. And last night, the connection between that Giza Plateau, the constellation Cygnus, and a possible connection to the Kepler mission of NASA. I've got something really pretty blockbuster to tell you tonight that I did not know last night. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. Well, on this Osiris thing with the Giza Plateau. You made mention, I think it was last night or the night before, about that those things had been built 10,000 or so years, I mean, longer than we have been told.
Well, almost, that's right. You got it, but let me clarify that before we go on. The last time there was enough water to have done the damage that's done to the Sphinx, the last time there was enough water in that area was in a period from 10,000 years ago to 12,000 years ago, somewhere in there. Okay, so let's say it was 12,000 years, okay? Well, 10,000. We'll say it was 10,000 years ago. That's when the water was there. The Sphinx didn't appear the night before the water. It had been sitting there for some time before that water arrived. And we don't know how long. So the Sphinx, the pyramids, etc., could be there maybe for 50,000 years. We don't know. But we know they were there when that water was there. And the last time that water was there like that was about 10 to 12,000 years ago.
Okay. Now, I was thinking that, let's say, well, 10,000, 25, 26, whatever, we probably had some type of pole shift in that time.
Well, you know, we might have. It's possible.
So, I'm wondering, if we go through those pole shifts, does the rest of Orion's Belt and what's the one that has the Danube system in it? Well, anyway, maybe those other planets, they also go through shifts over time.
Well, our pole shift didn't change our orbit. A pole shift doesn't change the orbit of the thing that's shifting. So our sun goes through a pole shift every 11 years, but it's still there, and it's still on its trajectory. It's still on its orbit around the galaxy.
Okay, but don't those, like the pyramids and other structures throughout the world, don't they, like, point at a certain spot, and when the planets are aligned, then a light will shine through a certain spot on that pyramid or whatever? So,
well, if you run, there are programs that you can use on your computer where you can take, say, Orion, and you can run Orion back to a specific date at a specific time, you know, like 10 p.m. on March 13th, 12,500 B.C. And this computer program will move that constellation back through time and put it in its position at that time of night on that date, so that you can see where it is, how it lines up in the sky. The positions of the constellations change relative to us every, I think it's 72 years, as the Earth wobbles. And we go through this progression. I think, what is that, every 72 years we do 1 degree difference. And so it's us and the planet that's wobbling and changing the way it appears in the sky. So, yeah, that's true. If you go back to 16,000 B.C., the North Star was not the one we have now. The North Star was Deneb, and it was Deneb is in the Cygnus constellation, but it was the North Polar Star in 16,000 B.C. down to 15,000. So things appear to change to us as we wobble through space. Yeah.
So, I just seems like that would change the calculations a lot for, you know, because you mentioned about that the NASA's new, part of their mission now is they're looking right at that star system.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, I got a couple of emails about this, so let me explain. If what we're talking about is this pyramid is lined up, well, we got to take a break. Hang on, I'll explain it on the other side. We'll be back.
And you are listening to the Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on earth.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. On the line with me is Rusty from Michigan. Rusty, what I was about to say, when we're talking about how is Giza laid out, we're not talking about how does it line up with a star or a group of stars out in the sky. What we're talking about is you take a map of that constellation and lay it down on top of Giza. So you're not looking at it as being correspondent to or in line with a star. We're talking about Giza being a star map. If it's a star map, it does not match Orion. If it's a star map, it matches Cygnus. And there are things like Stonehenge is built so that it lines up with our star, the Sun, summer solstice and winter solstice. So that's lining up with the star as it is in the sky on a certain date. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, is Giza itself a star map? And if it is, what system is it a map of? And it doesn't match Orion. It's close, but it doesn't match Orion. It does match Cygnus right down to specifically locating where Osiris' tomb is, which was underground, and there was nothing on top of the ground to indicate it was there. But it matches exactly with the star map of Cygnus. It does not match exactly with the star map of Orion.
That's true. I do see that. I'm looking at it on the TV channel.
Uh huh.
But the what I was really referencing to in the back of my mind is like Stinson's work.
Uh-huh.
He talked about this planet Nibiru, whatever, and then we had this planet Tiamat. Where our system changed in our relationship to the sun, or we may have had a double sun at one time. There's different schools of thought on that.
Well, if we ever had a double sun, we still do. But see, a planet, knocking a planet out of its orbit, now that takes, that's a mighty whack. But it can be done. You're not going to knock a star out of its orbit. It's too big, it has too much gravity, it's got too much power. A black hole can pull it out of its orbit, but that's what it would take. It would take a black hole, and then you don't see it anymore. So if we're seeing it, a black hole didn't eat it.
Right, so I'm just saying it's possible the reason that lines up, when it was originally made, it may not have been there because things may have changed since then.
But they haven't. You can run the stars, but look, our sun is in an orbit around the galaxy. Nothing disturbs that orbit around the galaxy. There are things that can disturb the orbits of planets because they're small. Our Earth is a little tiny, little bitty. It's the head of a pin when you put it up next to the sun. So, yeah, you can disturb the orbit of a planet fairly easily. Really not. I mean, it takes a mighty whack, but it can do it. If a planet collides with another planet, yeah, something like that, you could disturb the orbit. But the orbits of the stars, there's not any indication that unless they're next to a black hole, there's no indication that they are not flying together. Our sun is in a constellation. We can't see it. It holds its position within that constellation. Orion, the stars that make up Orion, relative to each other, are right where they were 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, relative to each other. Now, relative to Earth, their position in the sky changes. Okay?
Okay.
And the reason the position in the sky changes is because the Earth is wobbling on its axis. It takes us, they call it the Great Year, and I forget how many years it takes. I think, 26,000 years, something like that. Anyway, I don't even remember how long a great year is, but we move 1 degree every so many years. Our axis is off by 1 degree more every so many years. Okay, and then it makes its way all the way around so that we're back where we were after 360 cycles.
One more question here.
Uh-huh.
NASA, when they sent this probe or satellite, I think you showed the other night, looking at that star system, was that before the Norway Spiral and this Gulf of Aden? Was that before those events happened?
I don't know. Now, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure when the Gulf of Aden information first hit. I can tell you when Kepler was launched. It was launched March the 7th, 2008. No, March the 7th, 2009. Kepler was launched March the 7th, 2009. But, you know, it had to, Kepler was in development and was being built at least for a decade before that. These things don't happen quickly. And so it took them a long time to design it, and then to build it, and then build the component parts, and then assemble it, and test it, and then put it on a rocket and launch it. You know, you're looking at about at least a decade.
Right.
So, but I don't know about, I'm not sure when the date was for the Norway Spiral, and I'm not sure when the date was that we first heard about this Gulf of Aden thing. Certainly Kepler was in development before those things happened.
Right. That's just, so was it the Kepler, was it they had started designing that even before, I forget the gentleman's name who said that, who discovered that?
About Cygnus? Yeah. It would. They would have had to have had it in development. See, they launched it in 2009. Colin Andrews discovered the Cygnus-Giza relationship in 2008. So if there is a connection, it's not a connection based on Colin Andrews' work. He discovered that in 2008. But that would mean that NASA discovered it even sooner. They didn't tell us about it, but we're used to that. So if there is that relationship, and like I said, Rusty, last night, it may all be coincidental. But, you know, that's a big pile of coincidences. And I just kind of think that it's not coincidental. I think NASA knew something. But they would have had to have known it a long time before Colin Andrews discovered it.
Right. So how about Colin Andrews may have got a leak from someone in NASA?
Well, he might. He's, as far as I know, he's never told us that. But it's, of course, possible. Maybe he did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I got on it, but...
All right. Rusty, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. All right, it's Open Line Live, 623-444-5889. Or, if you're a first-time caller, you can call us at 623-237-3814. Again, that's 623-237-3814. That's the first-time caller line. If you are a... If you're listening outside of the USA and outside of Canada and you don't want to make the international long-distance call, send us a flash message with your question or comment, and I will be more than happy to read that as long as it's within our genre, and we'll discuss whatever it is that's on your mind as well, all right? The link for flash message is on my website. All right, now I told you there was some information that I wanted to share with you that I didn't have last night. I didn't know it until today. The Kepler mission is using some really, really advanced science. And it might interest you to know that the Kepler mission is looking at Cygnus, trying to detect inhabitable planets by using, are you ready for this, two parallel genetic algorithms. Now, I got asked, I told someone that today on the telephone just before showtime, and I got asked, well, what does that mean? And my answer to that is, well, that's above my pay grade. I don't know, but whatever it is, it has to do with genetics. There, Kepler is looking at Cygnus using two parallel genetic algorithms. The developer of that has a presentation on YouTube where he talks about it. I didn't have time to watch it and listen to it, so I'm not sure what that is all about. But the way they are determining whether a planet is habitable or not is somehow linked to these two genetic algorithms. Now, maybe you're a scientist, and maybe you know exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about genetic algorithms, and maybe you could explain to us what that means and how that works. Because it's pretty, from my point of view, pretty mysterious stuff. But they are looking at the genetic, or looking at Cygnus through two genetic algorithms. And, you know, it's pretty exciting what they have found. They have found some planets that they deem to be habitable. Okay? That means they deem the atmosphere, the temperature, the presence of water, etc., to be conducive to us. Now, we're not going to be getting on a bus and going over there to take a tour. This is a long, long way away, and using the types of propulsion systems that we know about, the ones that are in the public domain, you can't get there from here. Not in many, many, many lifetimes. And so, you know, we're not going to be headed over there for vacation. However, it's possible. Those of you who are members, you got to watch David Serreta last night give his presentation. And he talked about using gravitons, gravity, as a propulsion system. And he explained how that worked. And if we have that, or if we're close to having it, then possibly we could travel it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and it's open line tonight. What do you want to talk about? Out there across the land, from sea to shining sea, from the north to the south, the east, the west, all across the United States, Canada, all across the UK, all across Europe and Asia and Africa and Australia, and the islands of the Pacific. What is it you want to talk about? Well, you know, I left something out. South America. And I did not intend to do that. We have a lot of listeners in South America, you know. We have listeners in Brazil. We have listeners in Peru. We have listeners in Chile, Argentina. And, of course, we have listeners in Mexico, which is part of North America. But anyway, wherever you happen to be, what is it that's on your mind that you would like for us to talk about here tonight? What is it that you think is important? Now, you know, it's interesting because all week long, between open line shows, I'm getting emails from people who, you know, they're talking about orbs, they're talking about shadow people, they're talking about ghosts, they're talking about extraterrestrials, they're talking about secret space programs, all kinds of stuff in our genre. And So I know it's on your mind, and then it comes to Open Line Live. You have an opportunity to pick up the telephone and give us a call, and you chicken out. What is it with you, huh? What are you afraid of? Are you afraid I'll bite? Oh, come on. Grow up. You talk to your cousin on the telephone. Just consider me your cousin. I'm just Cousin Kevin. 623-444-5889 is the main number here in the studio. 623-237-3814. That's the telephone number for first-time callers. One of the things that we have talked about recently and is, I think, pretty important for us to talk about, pretty important for us to think about, is this incoming comet, Elenin. Now, there are some dire predictions out there about Elenin, and the program that we did, the show that we did about that, provided you with information, I think, that would help you to perhaps not have as much fear, anyway, of this incoming object. Hope so. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Cousin Kevin. This is Leslie, and I'm calling from Oregon.
Well, hello, Cousin Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was just calling to see, well, I know the last shuttle is scheduled to launch. I think it's July 8th. Have you heard anything about if they're planning on having a different... another shuttle or some kind of way to get us up to this, at least to the International Space Station or anything like that?
No, we are effectively out of the manned space exploration business. We'll be hitchhiking, catching rides with the Russian Soyuz, but we're essentially out of the manned exploration business with the last shuttle.
Just sad.
It's not only sad, it's unbelievable, it's incredible to me that the American population has allowed Congress and the President to get away with this.
Yeah.
But we let them get away with everything else.
That's true. And it, on a more personal note, I'm in graduate school for space studies in concentrating in aerospace, and I don't think I'm going to have a job when I graduate.
You might, but you probably would have, instead of working for NASA, you probably would be working for like Bigelow, or maybe for Richard Branson, you know, the private corporations that are getting into space. NASA keeps making noises about, we're not getting out of manned space exploration. We're gearing up to do more. Nah, not true. They're shutting it down. See, what happens when you close down, the people who have the expertise get older. Here's the deal. By the time they're ready to do manned space exploration again, which they say will be around 2020, somewhere around in there. Let's see. That's, 9 years away. Well, a lot of these experts, you know, they're in their late 50s and early 60s. You close down, those guys get too old to be interested in coming back. And the young people look at the situation and say what you said. I don't think we'll have a job. And so they don't go into the field. This is a killer. This move by Congress and by this administration is a killer for the space program.
Yeah, and there's already such a big, you know, gap already by the people who are trained in this field or, you know, a little bit older, and like you said, they'll be retired, and by the time jobs are offered, will we, you know, be trained enough to even do that? I mean, like, well, the knowledge hopefully won't be lost.
It will. The rocket that took us to the moon was called the Saturn V. We don't know how to build it now. That's the truth. We do not know how to build a Saturn V now. The people that designed it are gone. The blueprints were taken up and destroyed. And we don't know how to build a rocket that can take us to the moon now.
That is pretty sad.
It is. It is. But, you know, in your case, you should be able to go to work for some of the private space companies. Are you still there?
Oh, hello? Yeah, I'm sorry, I could barely hear you. I think it's on my end, so I'll just hang up and I'll...
Oh, there you go.
There.
So, that's much better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Better.
I was saying, you know, in your case, you probably will have a job, but it'll be with the private space companies.
Yeah. Well, at least I'll have a job.
You know, what you need to do is think in terms of doing a double major. You've got a major in aerospace, and you might do one in hotel management. And I'm not kidding now, because they are planning to build space hotels, and someone with that double major would be really useful to them.
Yeah, that would be really neat to have, you know, the chorus in space hotels. That'd be really neat.
People say it won't happen. It will. There will be space hotels. It will happen.
Yeah, well, if I get a job, I'll you know, reserve you a spot so you and your wife and your son could come on up.
Well, I would love to do that, and we'll do a show from there.
Great.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. 623-444-5889 is the main number. 623-237-3814. That's the number you call if you're a first-time caller. Give us a call at that number, and we'll be more than happy to hear what you've got to say. All right. The reason we have the first-time caller line is to make it simple for you to get in, but it would be very, very simple tonight because all the audience has gone to sleep. Well, until I did that. This Comet Elenine that we did a show about, there are people that said, you know, that's not even a real astronomer's name. And they came up with this it stands for extinction level event. Not so. Caller, can you hang on through the break, and we'll get you right after the break? All right, you hang on. We'll get to you right after this break.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, like no other talk radio on earth.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. We have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
It's Francois from Montreal.
Well, hello, Francois from Montreal. What's on your mind this evening?
It's Zachariah Sitchin. You know, like I called you like a couple of months ago when you have a guest that's like talking about Zachariah Sitchin.
Uh-huh.
And I told you like my opinion was like. First time a couple of years ago I heard about Sitchins, you know, I go to search for like dictionary of Sumerian English.
Okay.
And there was like on some stuff from universities around the world, and all the dictionaries contain about 600 words, you know, and you have a lot of guests who quote Sitchin like it's the Bible, and You know, like, if they're just like 600 words that are in Sumerian, you know, like, there's a lot of filling the blanks.
Well, what you have to do is you have to ask, when were those dictionaries compiled? Because what we know about an ancient language grows virtually every day. So those dictionaries maybe were published quite some time before Sitchin started his work. There, just a few years ago, nobody could read Mayan, the Mayan language. Nobody could read it. And then this really smart guy got a little edge, got a little, figured out a little bit of something, and then it snowballed. And now, here we are, you know, like a decade or two later, and there are people that can walk up to a Mayan wall that's got all these hieroglyphs carved on it and just read it as if they were reading their native language. But only 10, 20 years ago, nobody could read a word of it. So it grows and it snowballs, and it's possible that those dictionaries were compiled a long time before Sitchin's work. And when it comes to cracking an old language, an ancient language, and decoding it, even 2 years can be a long time, because there can be a lot of developments in a year or two. However, there are people who quote Sitchin as though they're quoting the Bible, and you're right. There are people who've made a religion of Sitchin. There are people that have made a religion of Billy Myers. There are people that have made a religion out of the Roswell incident. And, you know, I don't judge them. On the other hand, when you set yourself up with a whole bunch of beliefs and say that you know it's true, that's kind of like saying the earth's going to end on Saturday, the Bible guarantees it. It's pretty much the same sort of thing. And
Maybe. Like 2 years ago in Montreal, we were having an exposition on Tutankhamun with all the real stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the lady giving the tours, she didn't talk to me. She was an Egyptologist, but she knew like everything, you know, like about the Egyptian antique. And she could. We were asking her like what that mean, you know. And there were like a long, big stone with a long text. And she kind of read the first lines. And after that, she said like, we know this word means that, this word means that, but the Egyptian language is just like half decipher, you know. So like what when you read, like you go to the library and you read the Book of Thoth, you know, like it's not there's a lot of filling in the blank if the thing is real to start with.
Yeah, and you know, there's also this: when you translate, now you speak French, so you know this, when you translate from one language to another, sometimes, for instance, you might say something in French, makes perfect sense, but if you try to translate that into English, we just in English don't have exactly the same words to get exactly the same meaning. You just get as close as you can in your translation. And that's true in any language that you translate. If you translate from any language to another, you're going to run across certain words that there's just no exact translation. And an example, there are four different Greek words that we translate in English with one word, love. But there's four different Greek words that we translate as love, and they don't actually mean that. One of them does, but there's four separate words, and it's four separate concepts. But we just don't have the tools in the English language to translate that into English. So we just get as close as we can. And but that's true when you translate from one language to another, regardless of which two languages you're talking about. And listen, some days...
It's like when I use Google Translate on my computer, you know, like I can translate any language, like to French. I can translate French to any language, and I think like for English it's quite good generally. But if you try the reverse, translate like other language to French, like it sounds funny, you know, like because French is kind of a complicated, and the extensive dictionary contains like 400,000 words. That most French speaking people just know like 20,000, you know.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. Now, let me ask you something, and I think you probably, I think I know the answer to this. You speak French, you speak English. On some days, when you get up, is your mind sort of in English gear, and other days it's sort of in French?
My natural language is French, and you know when I can read easily, but when I'm talking I have to pause, like to choose my words, you know. I'm kind of translating in my head.
The reason I ask that, you know, some days I wake up and my mind is in Serbian. I hear people speak in English, and I understand what they're saying, but the words that come to my mind to answer them come to my mind in Serbian. Other days, it's Romanian. Other days, it's Spanish. And some days, I luck out, and I wake up in English. It's a mess.
But it's not like me. It's not like that in my head, you know, but
your head's not messed up then.
You know, I do channeling like sometimes, and sometimes it's in English, sometimes in French.
That just proves your head's not messed up.
Worse as some other people, you know, like
Okay, well, Francois, I want to thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it. I think you bring up a good point about Zechariah Sitchin, and there are, you know, some people look at Sitchin almost as if he's a prophet of God. I give credit where credit is due. I think Sitchin did some fantastic work, but he's just another man, just like you and me.
No, you're not a man, you're a God.
Not I. Trust me, not I. And I don't want to be.
Bye.
All right, thanks for the call. Oh, man. Talk about a job. Man. And no appreciation either. Being God? What a job and no appreciation. 623-444-5889 is our number. It is BYOT. Bring your own topic. And we'll talk about it, whatever it may be. I've got a flash message from, let's see, who is this from? Ross in the United Kingdom. Hi, Kevin. There are articles on the web that state that the small islands of Craigleith, the Lamb and Fidra, which are near Edinburgh, align close to Orion in a similar way to the Giza pyramids, Giza pyramids were thought to. I wonder if overlaying Cygnus over a map of them would bring up anything significant. Well, I don't know. I was not aware of that people were saying that it looks like the Belt of Orion. But if it does, it certainly would be worth overlaying a map of Cygnus and checking it out. He continues by saying Rosalind Chapel is relatively nearby, as is Dunfermline Abbey and other historic sites, including a lot of Masonic buildings. By the way, the Lamb Island is the one that Uri Geller recently bought. Cheers, Ross. Well, you want to keep your eyes on it and make sure it doesn't disappear now that Geller is there. You know, he's supposed to be able to make things do weird stuff. Thank you for the flash message. And, hey, do the thing with the Cygnus map and let us know, and we'll take a look at it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
You know, all this stuff about Eldon and Planet X and Nibiru and all of this kind of stuff is, you know, it seems to me just working the world up into a frenzy of fear.
But, well, I think so.
They don't have to wait till 2012. Look at all these tornadoes that are flying across the country now. They ought to be worried about those instead of worried about 2012.
Yeah, I think... We, Mike, we like to be scared. We humans, we like to be scared. That's why horror movies make a lot of money. That's why there's action thriller movies, they make a lot of money. We like to be scared. If we didn't like to be scared, we wouldn't ride roller coasters. And
don't forget about the antacid tablets.
Yeah, well, yeah, and the thing about it is, it's just part of our nature, I think, part of human nature. We like to be scared. Some people are addicted to worry. They like to worry. My mother's like that. She likes to worry. And she likes to tell you, oh, I'm so worried about this person or that person. And there are a lot of people like that who just love to be worried. I don't guess we'll ever get away from that. But I guess, you know, I'm not afraid of 2012. I'm not afraid of Comet Elenine. And I'm not going to worry about it or lose any sleep over it because there's nothing I can do about it.
That's correct. And you and I have had these conversations, and you know that I'm not afraid of it either.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'm not afraid of Elenine because if it comes in, if Elenine comes in, it's going to hit the Earth. I'm hiding behind you. You're going to get it first.
That's okay. I'm wide enough to cover you.
Yeah, but, you know, there's nothing we can do about it, so there's really no reason to worry about it. Just make sure you got your surfboard and you're ready to ride, whatever comes.
Right. We had a couple of tornadoes in our city yesterday in the county, so we know about all these tornadoes and things here in Kentucky. And what about that video of the truck that got ripped up by the tornado out there in Oklahoma?
Uh-huh.
And today they talked to the guy on the news, and he just got something wrong with his arm a little bit. That was fantastic.
Yeah, he's very fortunate. For people
and
who have never lived through a tornado,
fear-looking things that were in that video. Nobody mentions that.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you share that with the audience?
Yeah, for those that haven't seen the video of the truck out in Oklahoma that gets hit by a little white tornado. There's about five spheres on the left side of the scene, five or six, as it's a tornado is moving across, and they're moving behind it. And then there's one comes up from the right side in front of the tornado. It comes up, stops, backs up just a little bit, and then comes forward a little bit, and the tornado goes past it. And we're thinking, oh, what, was that a car? But then it's still sitting in the same place when the tornado's gone. And once you clear all that up, you'll see that those things are not on the ground. They're not cars. They're not lights. These things are actually up in the air. And if you haven't seen that video, I suggest each of you get a copy of it and look at it.
Well, you know, there's some weird stuff happening all around the world. More and more, Mike, I'm getting email where people are talking about orbs. And that's what you're talking about here. They're spheres.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the orbs appear to be solid. Some of the orbs appear to be transparent or translucent. More and more we're hearing reports about people seeing these orbs or spheres. And, you know, that's what, in World War II, Mike, that's what the pilots were reporting. And they came to call them Foo Fighters, But more and more, we're hearing about that same thing, and it was these lighted orbs that would appear beside them.
Right.
What do you think that is?
Well, in World War II, the Foo Fighters, in a lot of cases, they were small spheres or orbs, about 6-8 inches in diameter, up to 3 feet. But some of these orbs that we're seeing, like the orbs that fly over Mexico City, the orbs over South America, these orbs out here around these tornadoes, these appear as taken on film by the helicopter that was flying along this tornado to be maybe 10, 15 feet in diameter, each one of them.
So what do you think they are?
Well, I don't know if they're remote control, but they're definitely some kind of flying vehicle. And I have a friend who thinks they're Russian built. They're called Russian Cosmospheres. And I don't know that I disagree with him totally, but I don't agree with him totally either, because he says that the Russians have the Cosmospheres and the Americans and Britain have the triangles, the black flying deltas.
Well, you should consider running for president, because you can say yes and no all at the same time.
Yeah, I know. That's the way I stay out of trouble.
Oh, mercy. Mike, thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right,
bye-bye.
Yeah, you can say yes and no at the same time. You could be president. And make everybody believe you meant it. Comet Elenine, you know, I've had this discussion with a number of folks. I've had this discussion on air with guests as to whether I think, you know, if the government knew that this thing was going to hit the Earth, would they tell us? And I think the question is, should they tell us? The answer to would they tell us is no. No. Absolutely nothing makes me think they would tell us. But should they? Well, if there's nothing that can be done, I mean, if it's really going to be that massive and there's nothing that can be done, what's to gain by telling people? Just the fact that it's coming in. Look how many people are biting their nails now. And we're being told that it's going to miss the Earth. It's going to fly pretty close to us. It'll be at 0.233 AU. But at 0.233 AU, it's still, you know, that's several million miles away. It's going to miss us. But it's going to be close, and it may cause some disruptions of our magnetic field. It may cause some earthquakes. It may, you know, who knows? And it may already be doing that. We've had at least one guest who said, yes, that is happening. But should they tell us? I mean, really, what do you think about that? If the government knew that a large asteroid or a comet was coming in and it was very likely that it would strike the Earth, should they tell us about it? And, you know, I've taken some flack. It's okay. I can take it. I got a flak jacket. I've taken some flack from people who say, well, of course they ought to tell us. We have a right to know. And once you know, what are you going to do about it? Really, think about that. Once you know, what are you going to do about it? Well, some people say, well, you can pray. Well, you can do that anyway. Well, you know, you could go visit your mom. Well, if you think you need to visit your mom, you ought to go do it anyway, regardless of whether there's a comet coming in. Whatever it is you think you would do, you think, well, if I knew that there was a big, big chance that I'm going to be dead tomorrow because this comet's coming, so I want to be sure I go do this. Well, whatever it is you think you need to do, go ahead, because you might be dead tomorrow anyway. You ought to be doing at every minute what you think you ought to be doing the minute you die. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
I'm not sure if you want to talk about this subject or not, but you, when you were talking to, I believe it was Francois, and you said about thinking in Bosnian or speaking in Bosnian, I recall seeing in the news yesterday where they just captured a Serbian general, Ratko Mladic or something like that.
Mladic,
What do you think of this? I mean, I heard you mention before that there were not atrocities.
No. Don't mix them up. The Bosnian War is a completely different country and a completely different war from Kosovo. What they have accused these people of doing in Bosnia was done. Yes. All three sides. That was a war with three sides. You had the Serbs, the Bosnians, and the Croatians.
Mm-hmm.
In some places, you had the Bosnians and the Croatians fighting together against the Serbs. A few miles down the road, you'd have the Bosnians and the Serbs fighting against the Croatians. A few more miles down the road, you have the Croatians and the Serbs fighting against the Bosnians. It was crazy. It was absolutely insane. And the atrocities that they talk about in the Bosnian War really did happen. But they used those because it was much on everybody's minds. Okay, everybody knew about Srebrenica and the 7,000 men and boys that were executed at Srebrenica. And Mladic is responsible for that. He's one of the people responsible for that. But that was much on everybody's minds whenever Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright started talking about Kosovo. And it simply was not happening in Kosovo. It didn't happen, period. It did not happen. It was a lie. But they used that to get the American people stirred up so that we would support the war against the Serbs. And so we would support the bombing of Yugoslavia. But that was... I used to watch them on CNN. I was sitting in Kosovo when they were on TV talking about things that I knew didn't happen. They were talking about things that went on right where I was sitting. Hang on for a minute. We'll get you on the other side of this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and I'm an old guy. I forget. Jerome from Pennsylvania is on the telephone with us. So, Jerome, what was happening with Kosovo is you had the American administration going on television and in front of the UN and telling everybody that there was genocide going on in Kosovo and we had to stop it. There was no genocide taking place in Kosovo except that being done by the allies of the United States of America, the Kosovo Liberation Army. They were slaughtering people, but it was being blamed on the Serbs. They were being accused of doing this, and it wasn't happening. In Bosnia, it was kind of like, I used to say that, you know, the Bosnian War was like this. There are no virgins in the whorehouse. Nobody was clean. All three sides committed atrocities. And so when they talk about Mladic and the atrocities, yeah, but that was Bosnia.
Well, thank you for your thank you for your insight on that. You know, it's confusing here.
Well, it is, because the news media makes sure that it's confusing here. But look, they had a chance to get Mladic in 2000. In 2000, I traded a favor to an Albanian mafia boss, something that was completely legal, in order for information, in order to get information. And the information I got was this mafia boss owned property all over Kosovo and Bosnia. And Ratko Mladic was renting an apartment from him at 215 Marshal Tito Boulevard in Prizren, Kosovo. And I turned that information over in 2000. It's 2011, and he's just been arrested in Serbia. What does that tell you?
Yeah. Maybe that's a little bit like Bin Laden, you know what I mean, and the Pakistanis.
So you don't buy that Bin Laden was killed in that raid. You think he was dead before that, right?
No. I think he was killed in that raid. I think he was killed in that raid. It's just that I find. You disagree with that, or?
I don't know what to believe about that. Madeleine Albright said on television in 2001, or as they were coming up toward the re-election bid for George Bush, she said on television that Bin Laden was dead, not 2001. When was it? Anyway. Whenever George Bush was running for re-election, she said Bin Laden died in 2001. They've got him on ice, and they're going to roll him out when it's politically expedient. Now, that was Madeleine Albright. Tommy Franks, General Tommy Franks, slipped up and said in a press conference that after the Tora Bora raid, that Bin Laden was dead. Could these people have been wrong? Yes, they could have been. Did they say it? Yeah, they said it. So, see, that makes it confusing. I don't know. I just, personally, I think it's a good thing that, regardless of when he died, I think it's a good thing that he's gone, because he certainly wanted to kill a lot of people.
Well, I agree that it's a good thing that he's gone. And I just wanted to thank you for making that free ebook to your members, Rasputin and the Russian Revolution.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Have you gotten to read any of that yet?
Yes, I've read the whole thing.
Pretty interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I couldn't believe how intelligent Nicholas
II,
the Tsar, was.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it gives you a whole different outlook. You know, we see the movie Nicholas and Alexandra, and we think they were just lovebirds forever, and they barely could stand each other.
Yeah, I mean, and when Rasputin died, she went to his grave every day.
Yeah, yeah, very, very interesting. And that's going to be an interesting show when we do that Rasputin show.
Okay, Kevin. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All righty. Yeah, you know, it's real easy for us sitting over here in the United States to get things confused about those wars over there. You know, we don't have it clear in our heads, in our minds, about where these countries are. Countries like Bosnia and Serbia and so forth, and we kind of get them blended together. And in our minds, but two separate wars, the Bosnian War and the Kosovo War. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria.
Hello, Haya.
Hi, I was listening to you talking about Bin Laden.
Uh-huh.
And quite truthfully, you know Bizarre Bhutto?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think it was in 2002, she was, just before she went back to Pakistan, they had been, she was talking because she was going to confront the government. She stood for democracy and in, on a number of occasions, and I've got all the videos, she has stated many, many times that Bin Laden was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
She actually names the murderer.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
she did.
This is in a different in different scenarios. I mean, I think she was on CBC or CNN, or she's been on a few.
Uh-huh.
Saying the same thing, and she, you know, they were talking about her safety, and she said when she gets back, she wants to find out who funded this man.
Mm-hmm.
So
she also.
To confirm the fact that he was dead, the fact that she had every intention of finding out who was behind it, she was murdered for it.
Yeah, there's some documents, I believe, in the WikiLeaks stuff that say that she asked for protection from the United States, or asked the United States for protection, and was turned down.
Yeah.
And,
well, probably because there was a lot of, let's say, follow the dots, you know.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised where the dots end up.
Yes, you would. I'm going to credit this to Thomas Jefferson, but I'm not absolutely sure he's the one that said it. One of those old guys, Thomas Jefferson or Ben Franklin or somebody back then, said that politics and the making of sausage are much alike. The common man does not need to see either. And what he's talking
true.
About is it gets all very gruesome. And
yes.
It's true. Politics is a gruesome business.
Well, one of my mottos is I'd like to meet an honest one.
Well, if you do...
There are not many out there.
If you do, I want to interview you.
Hey, I'll swap you guys. I'll take Ron Paul. You can have our prime minister.
I'm not going to get into that. I'm not
well,
stepping into that
pool.
Well,
I do like Ron Paul. I think he's somebody who really cares about the country.
Ron Paul? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He seems like a very sincere individual.
Yeah.
All righty, then. Well, I want to thank you for your call.
You're welcome, and have a great night.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, was Bin Laden killed during the raid? I have no proof that he wasn't. Was he killed or did he die in 2001? I have no proof that he didn't. So I don't know which way to go with that. And when I don't know which way to go, I just don't go. All I know is everybody agrees he's dead. And I agree that for the world, that's probably a good thing. Sad, isn't it, to think about somebody with all of that money and prospects and end up in such a condition that the world is better if you're gone. Really, what a waste. But we all have choices to make, don't we? Elanine is coming. Kind of reminds you of that old Three Dog Night song. Eli's coming, right? You remember that? Elanine's coming. Elanine is already apparently causing some disruption here on Earth. Based on what guests have told us, as it lines up with the Earth, and particularly if it lines up with the Earth and another planet, it seems to be exaggerated, even the effect that it has. And we're seeing earthquakes, big earthquakes, as a result of that, according to one of our guests. But is that really any reason to fear? Because fear won't stop it. It'll just stop you. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Louis from Connecticut.
Louis, I thought you must have moved to the moon, man. You haven't called us in, two years?
I just retired in October, Kevin. So.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I retired after 42 years of working.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I want to talk about Ben
Laden. Uh-huh.
Hey, they forgot one thing. You know, they said he had all these sex tapes and everything.
Yeah.
But they forgot one thing.
What's that?
That's why he'd been dead. What about, why didn't he have a dialysis machine where he was at?
Was there a dialysis machine at his compound where they say they killed him?
Right. Was there one there?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. But they would have said it. They said he had these tapes and everything.
Uh-huh.
I believe he'd been dead.
Well, like I say, there's some high-ranking people who have said he was dead.
Oh, yeah, they knew that.
And, you know, so the... obviously, somebody died at that compound. Who do you think that was?
Oh, probably a double. They got double for everybody.
Do you
probably
think that...
got a double for our president.
do you think that the double could have fooled his wives?
Well, who said they spoke to the wife? They could say anything on TV. They
could, well, you're right.
Media lies.
Yeah, you're right.
And one more thing, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
About that comet, Elaine.
Yeah.
You remember a few weeks ago on one of your shows, you have that Air Force retired person. He said there was a rocket shot from Phoenix.
Yes.
What if that rocket was shot to hit the Elaine comet?
Well, you know, maybe. Maybe. That might be the case. It certainly was a mysterious happening.
Right. And it's almost about the same time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Elaine is on its way here. I suspect it's going to be close enough for us to see it with the naked eye, but I don't know that. But I would suspect that it is going to be close enough to see it with the naked eye. And... Here's something, Louis, to think about.
Yeah, because the weatherman been acting crazy around here. Like a few weeks ago, the moon was on the wrong side of the house early in the evening.
What do you think's causing that? Hang on. Let's. I'll get the answer to that on the other side of this break. We'll be back, folks.
Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And on the telephone with me is Louis from Connecticut. Now, Louis, you just started to tell us the moon was on the wrong side of the house the other night. Did any of the weathermen or anybody on television comment about that?
They never do, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
They don't ever say too much about anything. I don't even watch TV that much anymore.
Smart man.
And one more thing, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
Just like the Mississippi River is flooding and they're breaching all the levees.
Uh-huh.
The people realize, people talk about Katrina.
Uh-huh.
Katrina bypassed New Orleans. The hurricane did not hit New Orleans. It was the levees that were broke. Well, it could have been breached. If they can breach the levees back now to relieve the pressure, who said the levee weren't breached back during Katrina time?
Well, you got a point. You got a point. Louis, thank you for the call, man.
Yes, you have a good evening, Kevin.
All right, bye-bye. All right, we have a flash message here from Christmas Island. Culkin from Christmas Island. I've got some channeled info that says Elanine is going to be a moon buster, and that tomorrow is going to be the day of departure for the Archons, the lesser demons. They're going to be sent back to hell from where they escaped. I really hope the second info is true, Francois. Francois, you fooled me by saying you were from Christmas Island, and somehow it got through our filters because it's supposed to check that IP address. If you're in Canada, use a telephone. Well, yeah, I've heard that possibly Elanine may be a moonbuster. There are people talking about that. I don't know. NASA says that it's going to pass the Earth. It's actually going to pass in front of the Earth's orbit. And it's going to be fairly close. When we say close, we're talking in astronomical terms. It's still going to be millions of miles away from us, but it's going to be fairly close, 0.233 AU. AU is the distance from the sun to the Earth. That's 93 million miles. And this is not going to be 1 AU. 1 AU is 93 million miles. This is not going to be 1 AU. It's going to be 0.233 AU. So it's relatively close to us. And it's, as I said, I think we're probably will be able to see it with the naked eye. Again, I could be wrong about that, but I think we probably will. One of the things that people, scientists, are saying and that they are concerned about is that we will pass through the tail of this comet. And who knows what kind of debris is in that tail of the comet. So there's some concern about that. If Elanine lining up with Earth and the planets, if that's not what's causing all these earthquakes and weird weather, if that's not it, then I would suggest Elanine is a diversion. Something else big out there is coming in. One or the other of those is true. Either Elanine lining up with the planets is causing that, or it's just a diversion and there's something big out there that we can't see yet. So is Zechariah Sitchin right? Is it Nibiru? Is it Planet X? Some people think that Nibiru absolutely is real. I have good friends that think that. There are other people who think that Nibiru does not exist at all. And that either Sitchin got it wrong or the Sumerians were writing fiction. Well, I'm not sure which one it is, but whatever's coming, whatever we are about to go through, we will live through. Most of us will live through it. Yes, there will be some casualties. These great catastrophes always have casualties. Yes, there are going to be casualties. There will be deaths. Earthquakes, cyclones, hurricanes, tornadoes, tsunamis. Yeah, there are going to be casualties. And I think we're going to rock and roll for a while here. But we're, as a species, as a race of intelligent beings, we will live through it. And we will succeed. Some people tell me I'm just way too optimistic. Oh, well. You know, we have lived through all of the other great catastrophes that have happened since we've been on this planet, I don't suspect that we will fail to live through whatever it is that's coming. I hope I do, but if I don't, that's okay. Our race, our species of intelligent beings, is going to live through this and prosper. So I don't worry about it. We've got all kinds of great stuff in our members area. You gotta wonder. You got 23 cents in your hand. You can't go to the store and spend it because you can't buy one dadgum thing in the store for 23 cents. You can't buy a postage stamp for 23 cents. 23 cents per day is all it costs to be a member at the Kevin Smith Show. You get to watch the show. If you miss it, it's up for 24 hours. You get to watch it for the next 24 hours, and then we do another show. All the audio recordings of the shows go into our archives, so you get that. You get forums, chat, blog. You get your own blog page. You get your own photo gallery, your friends page. You get a library of free ebooks to download. And as you heard tonight, in addition to what's in that library, I throw in extras. I gave a free ebook to our members a couple of weeks ago, having to do with Rasputin, because we have a show coming up about Rasputin, and I wanted them to get all the insight possible before we could before we get to that show. We have special broadcasts. We have the Video Galaxy. In the Video Galaxy, there are lots of videos for you to watch and more being added. So we've got lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff for 23 cents. And you got to wonder, since you can't go anywhere and get anything of any value for 23 cents, and you can come to the Kevin Smith Show and get a world of value for 23 cents, why you wouldn't do it? Have you ever asked yourself? I mean, sit down and have a logical, rational discussion with yourself and ask yourself why you haven't done it. It'll be pretty hard to come up with an answer. We would like to have you in our community of members. But above and beyond that, you will benefit. Above and beyond that, you're going to get way more than 23 cents of value. So how about joining tonight? Right now, 23 cents a day, that's $6.95 a month. Why not? What's keeping you from it? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.